Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 483, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on October 31st of the year 2004. And once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to present Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Hey, happy to be here.
Okay, we've been talking about the extraordinary airline businesses, if one could call it that, that were operated in the Pacific Northwest by Rick Bohlke and also the Magic Dutch Boys and Wally Hillier down in Florida. This is the milieu through which Mohammed Atta and many of the other hijackers moved into the United States. We've been talking about some of the extraordinary practices that these people engage in. One of the things you noted was that in addition to using aviation as a cover, both Bohlke to a certain extent and the people in Central Florida were also involved with managed care facilities. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Jackson Stevens made his money in managed care, I believe. And Jackson Stevens built the most imposing building in Venice, Florida, which happens to be just a block from the Venice airport.
And who's Jackson Stevens?
Well, you could tell me, I think. He was Jimmy Carter's roommate at the Naval Academy, and he rumored to have been the kingpin behind both George Bush Sr. in 1988 and Bill Clinton in 1992. He was alleged to have been the ultimate man behind the Contra cocaine drug running through Arkansas in the 1980s, and he's reputed to have headed the super-secret National Security Agency, although I don't know how that could be, because don't they release the names of those people?
Yeah, that I would red flag that one. It might be true, but I'd be surprised if he headed it. He may very well have had some kind of connection.
Well, his name appears in conjunction with just about every damn scandal back 30 years.
One of the things I would note is that Jackson Stevens is one of the people whose names crops up in connection with the vast web, the most tangled of webs around the BCCI, which also brings in a lot of the people from the Middle East and some of the characters who figure in the Al-Qaeda / 9/11 scenario as well. But more about these managed care facilities. It's just interesting how we have these parallel operations, one in the Pacific Northwest, one in Central Florida. We've got aviation cover, we've got managed care, we've got covert operations, we've got mob, we've got drugs, and then we've got hijackers and we've got mass murder here.
Well, the managed care company itself is instructive because it's so illustrative of virtually every other company that these people touch. It was busted out. Somebody made a lot of money when its stock went from like $35 down to 25 cents, but it probably wasn't the average investor. So that's the story there. These people are involved in big-time financial fraud, hundreds of millions of dollars.
And it is one of the things that appears to have been, again, sort of a parallel operation from the Pacific Northwest and also in Central Florida. Now, when some of this started to unravel, Wally Hillier, the fellow we spoke about last time, who appears to have been sort of the godfather for Rudy Deckers, Wally Hillier was going to shut down Deckers, and we at the very tail end of our interview last week, Daniel, we talked about the apparent attempts on the lives of both Rudy Deckers and Arnie Krutoff, the two Magic Dutch boys. Let's go into that at greater length. Tell us about what was going on, what happened with their crashes, and some of the extraordinary characteristics of those events.
Each was involved in within 6 months of each other in a near-fatal accident. A helicopter went down underneath Rudy Deckers while he was on his way to his final negotiation with Wally Hillier over the dissolution of their partnership.
How did he survive?
By clinging. Well, you know, actually, he knew something was wrong.
Sure.
Because he convinced another helicopter pilot who did traffic things for radio and TV in the area to accompany him on the half-hour journey from Naples up to Venice, because he said he grew bored easily. And yet when the other guy felt pushed ahead, Deckers called and made him hang back. So when Deckers' helicopter crashed, the other guy was there and picked him up and ferried him back to land.
So basically, he had requested an associate to sort of almost escort him because it looks like he anticipated trouble. What happened with Arnie Krutoff?
His plane nosedived. I mean, nobody knows. Because after the accident, the plane was immediately crushed to rubble.
Now, isn't that counter to FAA procedure?
You know, I mean, you talk to people at the airport and their mouths just hang open, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's an operation out there at the airport, and they would not be surprised if, you know, little green men, you know, came out of a hangar one day. You know, a series of astonishing events.
So basically,
I mean, wait, I gotta tell you this. I interviewed the now former chief of police in Venice, okay?
Uh-huh.
When I first got here, I called on him to pay my respects. And he was very apologetic with me. He asked me not to blame the city for what had gone on and explained that the city had no control over the airport. That was a federal jurisdiction. And he said the Venice airport is the kind of place where, you know, everything's like can be totally quiet, and then all of a sudden at 3 a.m, a Black Hawk helicopter, like, you know, touches down for 30 seconds and then takes off again.
Well, that happens all over the place, doesn't it?
Is that right?
Well, so I've been told, but then, you know, what do I know? I'm just a poor radio broadcaster. But, you know, speaking of which, before we get back to, let's finish up. One of the things that was interesting is after Arnie Krutoff's plane goes down, now Rudy Deckers asked a guy to fly alongside him, so apparently he understood that he was in danger and anticipated some problems. And then Arnie Krutoff, he suddenly drops. I mean, he drops in on the airport, a precipitous 100-foot drop or something like that. And the plane's wreckage was compacted before the FAA was able to examine it. That is contrary to procedure, Nespa.
Totally. You know, I mean, nobody at the airport could explain it. They were all dumbfounded by it. But you know, you're not stupid. I mean, people aren't stupid. I mean, if you run, you know, a little hobby shop alongside, you know, what's supposed to be a UPS store, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But nothing goes in and out the door but live alligators. You know that the UPS store is really like, you know, shipping wildlife around or something, right? You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's people. When you encounter individuals on a daily basis, you know, you get to know who they are. And so out at the airport, they became aware that there was an operation out there that did not make sense as a business and had a green light from the DEA, whatever that means,
mm-hmm.
because the local police were warned to stay away, that they had a green light from the DEA. So that's an interesting place to start. And then when I discovered, I mean, there's a million facts like this, but I discovered, for example, that the owner of the flight school, Wally Hilliard, was also in business with a man who was flying international courier flights for the UN.
Oh, tell us about Mr. Khan, because he had a very interesting curriculum vitae as well.
PJ Khan, I mean, he's got a pilot flying for him who owns a license for an airline license, which a non-U.S. citizen is not allowed to own. And not only that, but PJ Khan is flying daily flights to Havana.
Havana, Cuba.
Havana, Cuba.
Which, of course, is correct, not something.
Correctamundo.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that Wally, okay, who's this Midwestern Republican conservative, had also made a number of flights down to see Fidel. You know, on one of which, at least I was told, he had a paper bag full of presidential Rolexes to pass around.
That is an interesting thing for somebody who's going to be visiting Mr. Castro on behalf of the Bush administration to be doing. The cast of characters is really, really interesting. I guess we could call PJ Khan one of many con men involved in this scene. Forgive the bad pun. Among the many things you talk about there, one of the things which perhaps indicates just how far out of the baselines, again, this whole group of people could run with impunity. Before we get into some of Mohammed Atta's Saudi cover go ahead. Something you want to add here?
Yeah, there is, because, you know, I mean, we're not talking about past events here, okay? These people are still operating with impunity inside the U.S., and Rudy Deckers is right now, along with another German man I know from Naples, Florida, undergoing jet training in Tennessee.
Rudy Deckers is still in the U.S. and he's undergoing jet training?
Not only that, but I have eyewitness testimony that a charter service in Naples is being used to slip Rudy Deckers illegally into the U.S. without going through customs from the Bahamas.
So this is gay verily even as we speak.
Wow, yes, man. I mean, I have sat, it is unprecedented what I have done. I have sat on an active operation for 2 years and lived to tell about it. And probably the only reason I've lived to tell about it is because my attempts at getting the story out are so feeble.
Well, you know, the main media levels tend to be controlled, and something I've encountered, and we won't linger on this, maybe in a future broadcast we can talk about the 911 BS movement, but they put up these clouds of disinformation. You know, the cruise missile hit the Pentagon and the whole nine yards, so that the average citizen, most people are trying to, you know, keep their families together, work, luckily if they can work, and they just haven't got a lot of time to paw through the details of these things, so your work like yours gets eclipsed, unfortunately. But this, in other words, Deckers basically, this is a current situation. It's
absolutely, right at this moment, and they are associated with another German man in Naples, and a man who came into this country, whose name now is A.J. Black, who came into this country on an Italian passport, but is in reality an Egyptian.
Oh, good.
And he's associated also with the Turkish military attaché.
Oh, well, because, you know, you made a reference in Sod 1 to Sybil Edmonds, and one of the organizations that she has been attempting to shed light on was something like the Turkish-American Federation or something like, but it was a Turkish-American organization of some kind. So
right. I understand, you know, without any first-hand knowledge, I understand Turkey is used as a route to infiltrate heroin to Western markets. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but we were last week we mentioned that Yaslam bin Laden, the head of SECO, which also has been implicated in some investigations with Osama bin Laden's activities, his jet business trained pilots out of all places, little old Huffman Aviation owned by Rudy Deckers in Florida. But one of the things that I've talked about with my listeners in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal was that the board of directors of SECO, the company headed up by Yaslam bin Laden, had people involved with the Shikarchi AG case. Now, that was an Iran-Contra, you know, intelligence-slash-organized-crime-drug infiltration operation that intersected with the Turkish Grey Wolves, one of whose members, Mehmet Ali Ajah, shot the Pope. So, yes, indeed, they are indeed involved.
It's a completely multinational crew. And in this regard, there are several quotes, several things people told me in the course of my investigation that have stuck with me. And one of the things that has stuck with me is something I was told by a man who I suspect had a lot to do with running the Venice airport during the time in question, who had, he told me, looked into Rudy Deckers and been told by the person he called to inquire about Deckers to leave it alone, that Deckers was bigger than national. He's transnational.
Sure.
Okay, so that phrase, transnational, stuck in my mind because it's a motley crew of, it's a multinational motley crew. I mean, there's Tunisian, there's this Turkish guy, you know, right now. But the important thing, I think, to convey to you is that the operation, rather than having been faced down by my investigation here, is still completely intact and operating probably on, you know, on all 12 cylinders. Right here in the good old USA.
Sort of like an organized crime equivalent of the United Nations. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, which again is sort of indicative of the complete impunity and something which would strain credibility, you mentioned Charlotte, Florida, and there was another one of these weird protected flight schools up there. And was it in Florida or Venice that where the sheriff's department had 23 helicopters stolen? What if you develop that a little bit for us?
Well, that's right here too. Okay, the next town down south of Venice is Port Charlotte. It's in Charlotte County. Actually, there's only one town in Charlotte County, but it's a county nonetheless, and there is the Charlotte County Airport. And the Charlotte County Airport is where Muhammad Atta operated out of in January and February of the year 2001.
Right.
And the FBI doesn't want you to know that, and has gone to some lengths to make sure that you don't know that. But it is indeed indubitably the case.
Right.
And the Charlotte County Airport is also the scene, I was told, by a very chagrined Charlotte County sheriff of the theft of 23 helicopters over the past several years.
From the sheriff's department.
Well, yes.
This isn't just normal helicopter theft, which, of course, goes on all the time, but they were stealing these helicopters, 23 all in all, from the sheriff.
The idea that Charlotte County would ever have need for 23 helicopters is a ridiculous one, okay? I mean, it's not Los Angeles, right?
All right.
They'd be bumping into each other, like, over the farms, okay? Uh-huh. But they had lost 23 helicopters, and the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office had gotten the helicopters through the same generous government program that had provided C-130s to drug cartels instead of the U.S. Forest Service, the exact same program.
And these were stolen.
Yeah. I mean, they had been, a new sheriff came along and said, where are these, they gave him an inventory of what he had, like 14 cruisers and, 25 helicopters. And he goes, well, where's the other 23?
Interesting.
Maybe we should look into this.
But and also remember
they know where the helicopters are. Uh-huh. I mean, he told me sadly that the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office has a intact helicopter in good order that is today operating in Chile. Okay, presumably as protecting Charlotte County's far southern border.
Well, it is a fascinating state of affairs. Bear in mind too, you don't just sneak in the middle of the night and clandestinely hotwire a helicopter
off. No, listen to this, because you will find this interesting and entertaining, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed two local top law enforcement officials in Charlotte County.
Right.
I interviewed the sheriff, and I interviewed his predecessor, a man who is known as the Major, okay? So I am in the office of two, respectable cracker southern sheriffs when both of these men tell me that because of the 40-year history of CIA covert activity in their county that they've witnessed, in their position as law enforcement, and have been unable to do anything about that, they both believe that the CIA had something to do with the World Trade Center attack.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm now in the Wizard of Oz, because I'm looking at two southern cracker sheriffs, man, and I'm going, I can't go there. I would need to see evidence.
Uh-huh.
It was just bizarre, the last thing you'd ever expect to hear from a southern sheriff.
As you put it in your book at one point, after uncovering this incredible concatenation, it's enough to make you want to buy a bunch of suntan oil, a boogie board, and a pitcher of margaritas.
Well, because clearly we can't do anything about it. We can't even know about it. Imagine how our recent 3-year history would be different if only on September 15th, 2001, we knew, and it had been on the front page of the Washington Post, that the owner of the flight school that Atta and Marwan went to had his Learjet confiscated with 43 pounds of heroin on board the same month they got here.
And that, of course, we spoke about last week. That was Wally Hilliard, sort of the godfather of Rudy Decker's operation. Daniel, one of the things you talk about, we're down to about the last 6 or 7 minutes of our program here, so we're going to have to move quickly. But you mentioned one of many cases of strange bedfellows that you uncovered down there in Florida in connection with the environment through which these hijackers moved. And that is connections between Mohammed Atta, an apparent member of the Saudi royal family, and a convenience store owner. And that's not your usual set of associations. Develop that for us, if you would.
Well, the rumor at Huffman Aviation was, because Atta was treated with such deference, was that he was somehow associated with Saudi royalty. A physician from London who attended the flight school same time they did, found that, slightly, somewhat plausible, because he always had a bodyguard and never flew alone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he was somehow Saudi-inspired. And what was the other part of your question?
Well, we had this...
and the guy... Well, okay.
And the thing...
Who he hangs out with. All right, well...
Well, how about the Saudi prince,
I'm telling you that now. Okay,
great.
All right, so we interviewed the local cab driver on the day shift. Boy, you know, I mean, that should have been the first thing I thought about. It wasn't. It wasn't until a friend came down to help me that we located this person, and he said, "Oh yeah, I drove Muhammad Atta around. I drove Muhammad Atta with Rudy Deckers a couple times." I picked him up a number of times at a apartment building in downtown Venice, and in fact the same apartment building you're living in now, he told me. And then I confirmed it with the neighbors, you know, three doors down here, that an apartment had been used, had been rented by a Lebanese convenience store owner who disappeared the day after September 11th. The convenience store is right across the street from here. This convenience store owner, interestingly, okay, so I think, okay, we've got, this is part of the operation, this guy, right?
Okay.
I mean, he clearly is part of the operation, but he's Lebanese, you know, so, I mean, you know, was he slipped under the radar? What? I discovered that this Lebanese convenience store owner had 5 years earlier been a partner in a gambling ship that parked itself in Venice, despite city and county efforts to get it to leave, for an entire year, 4 or 5 years ago.
Interesting. And then you decided to move into the convenience store business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the convenience store still sits there empty today.
Uh-huh.
I've gotten, I mean, that's a very interesting lead. Because obviously, look, here's the deal. An immigrant convenience store owner is not a partner in a obviously well-connected gambling ship.
Not to mention an associate of a Saudi prince.
Yeah, that's able to, you know, we haven't got to that.
Okay.
Anyway, Ada left from this convenience store owner's apartment several times to pick up a Saudi royalty, a man who portrayed himself as Saudi royalty, or at least the cab driver thought he was, all right, at the Orlando airport several times, and they brought him back. When this Saudi royal left 6 weeks later, the cab driver told me he was asked to help carry down a chest to the cab that the Saudi guy was taking back. I mean, he flew in a private Lear. And he said the chest, which is, you know, kind of like a woman's hope chest or something, you know,
right,
sits down at the bottom of the bed, weighed more than anything he'd picked up in his life. Oh, by the way, the man who helped him carry the chest down was none other than Zacharias Moussaoui.
He's the accused 20th hijacker.
Right, exactly, who no one apparently has ever seen in Venice before.
So it's basically what we have here, to recap briefly. We've got Muhammad Atta, a Lebanese convenience store owner who'd previously been involved in a major gambling ship operation in Florida, an apparent Saudi prince, and Zacharias Moussaoui, the accused 20th hijacker, engage in some very, very nefarious business of as yet precisely undetermined nature.
Well,
and they were bringing out this big, heavy chest. What do you think was in there?
Well, see, I had no idea, so I called a guy I know who would, okay?
Right.
And he said, without a beat, I mean, like he knew it like the back of his hand, he said, gold.
Mm-hmm.
Gold. It was gold. They had gold in the chest.
Yeah, and gold is obviously very, very heavy per unit volume and is also a favorite commodity of various forms of underworld activity. And also something really, really good for insurance in case there's an economic collapse. And there are some economic storm clouds on the horizon, not only in this country and the rest of the world as well. And so has any investigation of any of these links, where obviously we've got organized crime, we've got elements of the intelligence community, we've got massive drug trafficking, links to political and organized crime syndicates abroad, and all of this is the environment through which, again, for filling in our listeners, if somebody's just tuned in, this is the environment in which Muhammad Atta, Marwan al-Shahi, and others of the 9/11 hijackers were moving.
These are the people that any government prosecutor, any prosecutor, would be interviewing,
mm-hmm,
and subjecting to scrutiny.
Has any
these are Muhammad Atta's associates,
right? And with this, these are his buddies. These are his
the people with whom he did business while he was in Florida. Indubitably,
yep,
provably did business while he was in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And this is who, you know, that's who they are.
You know what? One thing, we've just got a couple of minutes here, and I want to make sure to give the contact information so people can get a hold of your book and videos and other material. But something we touched on, we didn't go into it at any great length last week, but Muhammad Atta, one of the shepherds that he was able to find were a mysterious unnamed German couple, and the Carl Duisberg Gazelle Shock, part of the Congress Bundestag program. Tell us about that, because that's another angle to this whole thing.
Well, I mean, I just found another, like, extremely, in the real 9/11 investigation, here's a new development. The Chicago Tribune, of all papers, in its third anniversary coverage of 9/11, from its correspondent in Hamburg, the guy was doing a recap, and, you know, recapping local people who'd met him and blah, blah, blah. And right in there, very matter-of-factly, is six-line interview with a local Turkish baker in Hamburg, who relates how Muhammad Atta had lent him $25,000 to start his bakery in 1995.
Well,
3 years,
cool.
3 years before Atta is thought to have ever met anyone in Al Qaeda.
And again suggests that there's a whole lot more to the story.
Well, Atta didn't even ask for a promissory note. Okay, I mean, Atta obviously had the money. Instead of being a penniless graduate student, as we've been told, he was obviously a man walking around with a big role.
And the CDS, the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, appears to have been one of the organizations that was helping to shepherd this guy around.
Well, they gave him money in four of the seven years he was in Hamburg.
And
that money came from us because it was part of a joint, what's known as the Congress Bundestag program. It's a joint U.S.-German program that brings engineers in for further training. And of course, engineers in Cairo is where the Muslim Brotherhood is strongest.
And actually, there's so many of the members of the Muslim Brotherhood, the parent organization of Al-Qaeda, are engineers that Egyptians often refer to the Muslim Brotherhood as the Brotherhood of Engineers. Daniel, we are all out of time here. Give us the information about how people can contact you or how they can get a hold of Welcome to Terrorland, your remarkable new book, also your previous volume that we've only touched on in these interviews, Barry and the Boys, as well as your other material.
Right. You know what? They should all get the new Muhammad Atta and the Venice Flying Circus video. It's a documentary I did on the first year I was in Venice, but included now, we've tacked on a half an hour of an interview I did with Muhammad Atta's American girlfriend. Matter-of-factly talking, I mean, indubitably Muhammad Atta's American girlfriend, you know, provably, I mean, the Sarasota Herald Tribune said she was. And just talking about who he was and you know, what they did together.
Yep, and there are a lot of interesting things.
Draw your own conclusions.
Okay.
And it's madcowprod.com, the Mad Cow Morning News. That's where all our new stuff is. We do stories every week. And the 800 number is 800-556-2012.
556-2012 is the 800 number. www.madcowprod.com. Those are the places to go to get a hold of Daniel Hopsicka's material. And recall spitfirelist.com, the website for Spitfire, stocks all of the materials I do, has an extensive website with tons of information. And remember, sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey, archiving the For the Record programs, more recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only, also on Real Audio at a longer URL. And this interview and my previous discussion with Daniel Hopsicker will be permanently available at the WFMU site. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 483, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.